This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon. Yes, it is 5 minutes plus one. Thank you, Jake Smithers, for the news. We are today going coastal. You're going to meet one of the owners of Huon Aquaculture in Tasmania. You're also going to meet Wendy Hargrave. She's in Port Douglas at the Taste Port Douglas Festival. And Peter Caravita has a new TV show coming on to your box on SBS, which is all about coastal living. All that coming up after this little break. Good afternoon, 6 minutes past one. You're on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. Thank you to Jake Smithhurst for the news, to Dean Beck for Word, and prior to that, Saturday Magazine. This is your show about food and wine, and so you and I are going to have a discussion today with Frances Bender. She is from Huon Aquaculture in Tasmania. A remarkable story, and I'm going to share that with you very shortly. Peter Caravita, who is known to many of you as one of those celebrity type chefs. He has a new TV program coming on to onto the SBS, which is called is all about being on the coast and eating on the coast and living on the coast. So we'll catch up with him. And speaking of the coast, Wendy Hargraves is in far north Queensland in Port Douglas at Taste Port Douglas, which is a food and wine festival happening up there. So we're going to check in with her and have a bit of a look at what it all feels like and sounds like right up there in Port Douglas. So we shall get on with it. Let's start with the ever delightful Frances Bender. Of course, we'll have a bit of music today to take you coastal as well. I caught up a couple of days ago with Frances, who talked to us about salmon farming, really. One of the things Tasmania is most noted for is, of course, beautiful, beautiful salmon. Frances Bender is from Huon Aquaculture and is here to sort of share the story with us, if you will, about how Huon came about and its relationship with other growers, certainly in Tasmania, and then how it's placed itself probably on a global stage. Frances, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Tell me how Huon all came about, because I understand this story of sort of a collective of growers, if you will, of salmon farmers evolved into what is now. Take us through the journey.
The journey for us began actually 30 years ago this year. It's our 30th anniversary.
Congratulations.
In 2016, yes. we're actually one of three salmon farming companies in Tasmania now, but when we began 30 years ago, there were 14. And we started off in an industry that simply didn't exist before. So it's been an amazingly fantastic ride. Very dynamic, very exciting, massive highs and massive lows, to actually now be the largest agribusiness, agri-industry in Tasmania, and the largest fishery by value in the country.
Wow, that's a big number.
From a standing start of not existing 30 years ago, yeah, it's worth about $650 million a year now as an industry, and it's an amazing success story for Tasmania.
Well, it's an amazing success story for you. Take me back to those days 30 years ago when it all started. How did you decide that farming salmon was going to be a way forward, or was it just a whim to help grow your then... Were you in cattle farming?
Yes, Peter and I were managing his family's cattle and sheep farm. So we had about a 3,000 acre property, and we were growing a beautiful herd of Murray Greys and fat lamb sheep, and we owned the little local butcher shop. So that was our first foray into the retail world of selling our produce. And we saw the farm actually has a lot of waterfront, and it's a beautiful area just in, down south in the mouth of the Yuin River. And the industry was just starting around in Dover, and we thought that there might be opportunities for us to perhaps diversify into fish farming as a way of Peter and I becoming perhaps more independent. And our first thoughts were that, you know, if we could make a success of this, perhaps we might earn some money to be able to buy a family farming property. Little did we know the monster we would create.
Why fish? I mean, if you've got that lovely big parcel of land and you've got sheep and cattle, was there not a thought of diversifying into another form of agribusiness rather than aquabusiness, like a, I don't know, growing horseradish or potatoes?
This is agribusiness, and it is farming, and that's what people possibly still get confused by. They probably think that because there's water involved, it must be like fishing. But one of the main reasons that Yuin Aquaculture has been successful and our company's been successful, and it is the only founding company to survive since the beginning of the industry till now, is the fact that we have never forgotten we were farmers. So it's always been about farming and the way we look after our stock and that attention to detail. And those principles of farming is what stood us in good stead.
Well, sort of
from then till now.
Preempting a question there, I suppose, but how similar then is farming salmon to farming any other sort of stock?
It's very similar. It's just wetter. So you really need to look after your stock, which of course any farmer does. You need to feed them well. You need to keep them stress free, and you need to look after their environment. And those four pillars are what we actually now call the Yuin method. And if you manage those four pillars well, and they're all totally and utterly interlinked, then you will actually be successful at farming. So whilst that sounds simple and sounds very basic, that is the basic platform. But obviously then we have, I think we can claim quite honestly that we've been probably the most innovative farmers. In fact, we would be recognised as some of the most innovative salmon farmers in the world because I think we had the advantage and or disadvantage of being so remote to the rest of the salmon farming community that's based in the Northern Hemisphere. Mm. We've always had to look outside the square and to think about different ways of managing a problem. We haven't had off the shelf equipment. We haven't had, in the early days particularly, right up until recently, we didn't have easy access to funds. We grew the business by the reinvestment of dividends and debt, so we had very strong relationships with our banks. So money was hard to come by, so we had to sort of look at every part of the business and how we could get the best return. So it made us be very, very innovative, and we've always looked outside our region and our area to looking at best practice and then adapting that to the Tasmanian environment, which is actually very different. Farming here is very different to farming salmon in the rest of the world.
So do you still look to the rest of the world, though, for those little bits of inspiration for your innovation? Do you sort of see something that's
absolutely
happening in the Northern Hemisphere and get an idea on how that can be adapted to suit your property?
Absolutely. We actually currently, we have a research and development arm of the business, and we are working with overseas entities, research entities, universities, centres of excellence, including our own centres down here, IMAS, the Institute of Marine and Antarctic Science, CSIRO, constantly in programs and other universities all across the globe in the applied science of fish farming. So we have very close and robust links with researchers across the globe.
Frances Bender is my guest. She is one of the owners of Huon Aquaculture in Tasmania. A fascinating discussion we're having already. I've got more of that coming up. Stay with me. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9 with me, Pete Dillon.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
We're talking about things that have a connection to the coast today, and one of those is a discussion with Frances Bender. We're partway through that. She is one of the owners of Huon Aquaculture and sharing some incredible stories around how Huon Aquaculture came from a sheep and cattle farm to be one of the most innovative salmon farms in the world. Here's a bit more of that discussion with Frances. Do you still farm cattle and sheep?
The family still does, yes. But we don't. We were, for when we first started the fish farming business, we were doing both. We were managing the farm and the fish farm and physically working in both. And then in 1994, Peter and I approached the family and said they were looking at diversifying into another part of another business as well at the time. And we said, well, if we can raise the funds, will you sell us the business at that time, independently valued? They agreed. We found a bank silly enough to take us on. And
I think smart enough, 30 years down the track. Yeah, smart enough, 22 years later.
Yeah, and that was the beginning of the ride on the roller coaster that to some aspects I think we still live on.
Frances, would you look back and say it's been a wonderful experience, or would you look back and say, God, we've learned so much and, you know, we've got grey hair and we've sometimes wanted to pull it out or set it on fire or just walk away. I mean, looking back, giving it some historical perspective, would you suggest that it's been worthwhile?
Everything you've mentioned, we've thought.
Including setting your hair on fire.
Sometimes on a daily basis. It's been the most amazing journey, and people quite often say to us, you know, did you imagine that that your business had become this? And I look at them and think, well, no, we didn't. Was this planned? Yes and no. There's been enormous highs, and we still have fantastic highs. We have the most amazing team of people that we work with that share our passion, and that's an interesting thing. That's a really important piece of feedback that we constantly get from a range of visitors is people comment to us about the staff that they've touched in their visit, about how passionate they are. And it's more than just a job for the team at Huon. It's about loving what we do and just continuously improving. So I think the other thing that still completely astounds me, even after 30 years, is the learning curve. The learning curve is actually still completely vertical. So as soon as we get the answer to one issue, on the way to actually getting that answer, we've discovered another 50 questions we haven't thought about yet, or things we want to actually improve or need to improve, or opportunities that we can take. So it is just the most amazingly dynamic business. It's awe-inspiring in its level of dynamism compared to nearly every other agribusiness that we understand and have relationships to.
Frances Pende is my guest. Frances, I wonder if you could sort of talk us through some of the challenges of farming fish. Obviously, there's going to be some point where you're milking the fish for roe. Obviously, there are also predators that would like to be interested in eating your fish. What are some of the big issues you face growing salmon?
Well, the big issues are the security of your stock. So we spend and we've invested a lot of money and time and research and effort into growing the very best smolt that we can. So we actually control the process now. When we started, we were actually just growing fish and selling our fish to. We were buying in smolt and we were selling our fish to other producers, and they were selling them in their brand. And then we realised that that really wasn't working for us, and so we actually stepped out from behind the farm gate and we took charge of our own destiny in relation to our brand. Then we also realised that we weren't getting the quality smolt that we needed, so we needed to actually take charge of the process from egg through. So we actually now have a fully vertically integrated company where we manage the process from egg all the way through to consumer. So we have branded product on supermarket shelves and we sell branded product into Asian export markets. So there's a level of expertise across every section of the business that's really world class. And so we've learned, I often comment, and this is absolutely true, that the two least qualified people in the business with no formal qualifications is Peter, who's the CEO and yes. Managing Director, and myself, who's an Executive Director, the founders of the business. Our staff are so highly qualified and so great at what they do that in the days when we might be struggling with a problem that they don't know about, you come to work and, you know, their passion lifts you up and gives you the impetus to keep going on, keep forging ahead and sort of sorting out the problem that you might be dealing with. But it's a business that if you have attention to detail in every single area, then you will succeed. You were saying about the problems that we have. We do have a major issue in Tasmania with an ever-growing number of very, very clever seals.
Yeah.
And they love salmon. And
they do.
They work together in a team and they problem solve. And I'm sure that they text, because as soon as one of them has worked out a way to get in or to get a fish, they all know. So they communicate amazingly quickly. So in the last 2 years, our company has invested over $100 million in rebuilding and rebuilding a new patented pen that actually keeps the salmon in and the seals out. And that was developed in-house by Peter and the team, and it's a huge benefits for the business moving forward now, because it also means that we've created also a safe working platform for our staff to work on.
Well, of course. And that's the commitment to IHS, but also commitment to keeping your crop as productive as possible. So I want to go back to these seals, because they are very, very clever. I understand that, you know, they worked out that if one of them sort of smacked its nose against the fence until it bled, and then they would sort of take turns in doing that until they made whole. Is some of those you talked about them working together, they do really seem to be quite clever.
Oh, yes, no, they're very clever. They'll jump exceptionally high. It's amazing, actually, how high a 300 to 400 kilo seal, because this is the size we're talking about. These are seals that are monster seals,
yep.
And they can jump metres high. So we have a 3-metre high jump fence on the new Fortress pens, which is the name that we've called our new pens, with a 3-metre high external predator fence. We've now, just of recent time, actually witnessed massive seals using their flippers to climb, using
really?
The mesh to try and climb out of the water. They charge the net, and if there's any holes, they'll force their way through. They don't seem to be concerned about getting caught, which sometimes is really a bad thing, because sometimes they will get caught getting out, and then sometimes occasionally we will have had a seal that's drowned itself, and because it's under the water we don't know that. But we don't have many incursions now with these new pens, because in Tasmania seals are still listed as endangered and they're protected. So we're in their environment and we actually have to keep them out and our fish in. We have no other way of dealing with them. They don't actually have a natural predator, so their numbers are growing. So that's why we took the decision to actually move to this new style of pen once we had the technology. And the other reason we did that is also because these pens are extraordinarily robust but flexible, And because we have moved offshore now with our farming, kilometres offshore in very, very exposed open waters, some of the most exposed salmon farming waters in the world, we needed a pen that would actually be able to stand up to the storms of the Southern Ocean.
Frances Pender was my guest. She is from Huon Aquaculture in Tasmania. And a fascinating discussion about how you can convert from farming sheep and cattle to farming salmon. It's a fascinating discussion, and one that I hope we get to have again with Frances. Very shortly, you're going to meet Wendy Hargraves. She's up in Port Douglas, sunning herself about. But before we do that, I thought it only appropriate that we have a little bit of the Chemical Brothers in a moment with their song called The Salmon Dance, because, well, why not? First of all, some messages on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. Show number 398. In 2 weeks, we'll be celebrating 400 shows, 400 episodes of Cravings, 400 Saturdays that you've sat and diligently listened and played with me on the wireless. It's almost 29 minutes past one. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We're going coastal today, and coastal means beachside. One of our good friends, Wendy Hargraves, yours and mine, is on our 398th program. She's lousing about on a hammock somewhere in Port Douglas, no doubt with a big pineapple in her hand full of rum and all sorts of goodness. It is the Taste Port Douglas Festival. Wendy is our correspondent today. Wendy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you going down good. There in the freezing cold?
Oh, it's not too bad today. It's bearable, Wendy. We'll say that.
Oh, well, that's good. Oh, well, that's dang it.
Are you wandering around in it? Sorry, go on.
I was saying, here I am hoping that you're all freezing down there, because it's a beautiful sunny day up here in Port Douglas. We've been blessed with the weather.
Yes.
And a whole heap of Australia's best chefs are in town plying their wares, so it's been a really fun start last night, and it continues today and tomorrow.
Plying their wares or getting or wandering around in flip-flops with tinnies of cold beer?
Well, there's a little bit of that going on. We had a great night last night. I was lucky enough to MC a dinner, which was the Melbourne dinner at Taste Port Douglas. Ian Curley and Raymond Capaldi, who you would well know as among the best chefs in Melbourne,
yes,
and they were let loose in Harrison's restaurant, which is Spencer Patrick's restaurant up here.
And Spencer is the man behind the Taste Port Douglas Festival, isn't he?
That's right. Yes. Spencer, and well, it's actually his wife Raina that does all the work. But anyway, Spencer's a very good cook, though. He's the youngest ever British chef to get a Michelin star at the age of 26 before I came out here, and worked at Phoenix with Gary Megan and Raymond Capaldi.
Mm.
Yeah, but they all got back together. It was a bit like the Three Stooges in the kitchen, seeing them all together last night. But they had a great time, and the food was spectacular. Raymond, in very Raymond style, did the what he called the beet cheek, which
yes.
is a play on the beef cheek.
Yeah,
made with beetroot, and it was absolutely spectacular. He did it. It sounds kind of odd, but that's exactly the way he liked it.
Kind of
it was delicious. It was great. And Ian Curley, very much the man in charge of the European in Spring Street, did the duck. He had to do duck, really.
Well, he's famous for that duck.
He is famous for his duck, so he did an assiette of duck. So it was a plate full of every bit of the duck you can imagine, cooked in every way you can imagine. So we definitely got a good feed there last night. Today, down at the festival grounds, it's pretty much it's a small version, a tiny waterside version of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It's got, you know, some fantastic produce, really good chefs doing demonstrations. You know, it's actually not too late to hop in a plane, head up to Cairns, and take a little drive up to Port Douglas. I think you should all consider it.
Well, it's a very beautiful part of the world. I worked up there many, many moons ago. We've got a mutual friend by the name of Hilary McNevin, who listeners you guys will know, of course. And Hilary and I first met in Port Douglas. I dare say she'll kill me for saying so, but about 25 years ago or thereabouts. Hill and I worked together up there at the Sheraton Mirage, so it's a bit of an old stomping ground for me.
At the Sheraton Mirage?
Yeah, yeah, we were kids.
That's
we were 11.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, how very
years old.
We were 11. Hey, why are you at this food festival? What's the purpose for Wendy Hargraves being at a food festival in the other end of the country?
I'm working, and I know people laugh at me.
She's working, ladies and gentlemen. She's working.
I'm working. So I emceed last night. This morning I was on a discussion panel on food media with Vali Little and you know a couple of other you know media types
yes.
in town. And there's also an amazing food demonstration stage. And tomorrow I'm going to be hosting Alistair McLeod and Matt Galinsky in,
oh, good
in
Lord.
Their they're just like Bud Abbott and Costello.
I was going to say you won't get a word in, Wendy Hargraves.
I think I'm going to be there just to sort of keep it clean. And as we speak, Adam De Silva's on stage with Nick Holloway from Nunu, which is an amazing restaurant
Palm Cove.
Here in Palm Cove. And Adam's causing all sorts of mischief.
That would Raymond be unlike him.
Back on, oh, no, exactly. Raymond Cataldi's back on stage today as well. He's cooking, which will be hilarious in this tropical climate. He's cooking his chocolate souffle with blue cheese.
That's going to go well. I'm not sure if you remember, Wendy, when Johnny Uzzini was here from New York a couple of years ago for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. He was in at Deakin Edge, or BMW Edge, I think it's now called, and was doing a demonstration with some chocolate. It was so humid in that room, in that space, that it just wouldn't work. Things kept collapsing. And this is one of the, you know, the finest pastry cooks in the world, and he's... nothing would have worked for Johnny.
Souffle flopped. Well, I think Raymond will be he'll be okay today. There's a beautiful, cool sea breeze, and it's not there's no humidity up here at the moment. It's actually the most perfect time to visit Port Douglas in winter. It's beautiful. Yeah, the one that I will have to get back to have a look at this afternoon though is Colin Fasnich. He is a very entertaining New South Welshman.
He's an Irishman, isn't he?
Oh, no, New South Wales, okay. I mean, New South Welshman. We've claimed him now. He's up here with, on stage with Anthony Huckstep, who's a Sydney journalist.
Food writer, yes.
And he thought he was going to be breaking down a suckling pig, and they're actually producing a hog. So that'll be a fun one to watch.
It will,
well,
indeed.
If you're not squeamish. And then the delightful Arla Wolf Tusker is on stage. I'm not sure what she's going to cook, but,
she'll be magnificent, whatever it is. Hey, Wendy, stick with me. I just got to play a couple of messages. I want to come back and talk a little bit more about Port Douglas itself. Have you got a few minutes to wait?
Oh, sure. I'll just order another pina colada, darling.
Yeah, you do that. One moment. Wendy Hargraves is my guest. She is up in Port Douglas at Taste Port Douglas, giving a bit of a sight and sound of what the Taste Festival up there looks like. We'll have a couple of brief messages and come back and talk a bit more. New to Joy podcasts this week, Sonia the Screamer and Clayton embark on a Melbourne International Film Festival adventure on Sci-Fi and Scream. Steph, Clayton and Beck take a look at the Olympics with two fantastic guests, including former Paralympian, actually not former, including Paralympian Kobe Scott on Stand Up Straight. Enjoy a smorgasbord of sweet musical treats on the latest Babble and Pop podcast. And David and Sue of Friday Drive present a lineup of diverse guests, including Wendy Stapleton on Driving You Mad, Driving You Crazy. And outtakes are absolutely fabulous and looking for closure as they celebrate two of this year's most anticipated queer films. Don't forget you can also download this podcast at joy.org.au/cravings. Joy podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and via iTunes. Share them today.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Through the magic of the wireless, Adam De Silva is here and is in Port Douglas at the Taste Port Douglas Festival. Also there at the Taste Port Douglas Festival with a pina colada in her hand, she tells me, Wendy Hargraves. Did you get time to get another drink?
Oh, not quite. So you could have stretched out that live read a little bit more, I think, Mr. Dillon.
Couldn't you have summoned the lad from the village to fetch you one while you're lounging about on a hammock?
Oh, doesn't that sound nice? I have to tell you, you said you used to work at the Sheraton. The last time I was here was about 10 years ago, and it had that fabulous tropical carpet that looked a bit like a Ken Dunn painting.
Oh, yes, that's been there a long time.
But it's all gone now. They've spent $60 million renovating the entire property.
Well, it needed it.
Yeah, it's in sparkling form now. It's very, very white.
Is all of that beautiful, beautiful green Italian marble still in the foyer?
No, They might have sold that to the highest bidder.
Well, that was Nat. I'll tell you a funny story about that green marble. So Pixie Scase and, of course, Christopher, they owned Mirage, Port Douglas, Gold Coast, and one in Hawaii. And they built those three. And when they were building Port Douglas, in the, as we used to call it, the Alison Moyet foyer, in the foyer there was all of this green marble. So they shipped it all over from Italy, and the tradesmen laid the marble. Pixie came in and said, "I don't like it. The things have got to go the other way." So they had to jackhammer the marble up, order one from Italy, and relay it. They did that three times, and the third time they didn't grout it, or they didn't use the adhesive. And she walked in, she said it's perfect. So they had to do it piece by piece. I'm not sure if that's an urban myth, but that was how far they went with the construction of that property. Way back, I think it opened in 1988 or 88, and I joined in 1990. So it was very pretty when I joined.
The excessive, the sheer size of the buildings is extraordinary. There's nothing like it in Australia. Mm. I wish though that they'd kept a Christopher and Pixie wing where you could actually pay to go and stay in the original Sheraton rooms. I think that would just go off like a frog in a sock.
You reckon?
Yeah, because they're all a little bit they're pretty and they're beige and they're, you know, everything's perfect for the hotel rooms. But, you know, if you could go back and go retro with my pina colada in hand, I think I'd be doing that.
Yes, indeed. And then delivering room service overnight to people who thought it more than appropriate to answer their door naked.
Oh,
the stories we could tell. No, I loved it. It was great. The stories we could tell. Let's go back to Taste Port Douglas. So you mentioned that Spencer's restaurant, Spence Patrick, we normally talk to him each year on this festival, but I thought it might be nice to talk to you because we can get an overall feel. If we put this in the in the sandbox of food and wine festivals, obviously Melbourne, Gourmet Escape in Margaret River, which usually happens in November, Noosa, mm-hmm. which happens around May, I think, next year, and then this in August. Is that probably the big four, or is there a few? Oh, there's Taste in Tassie as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit different in Tassie. It's a bit sort of, it's not quite as site-specific. It sort of goes, spreads out a little bit more. But I have to say, as all of the festivals, this one has a really nice grassroots feel about it. It was probably what the Noosa Festival was like back when Jim Barato first set it up many moons ago. This one in Port Douglas, because it's run by a couple who are really passionate about local food, it's very much about celebrating the farmers up on the Atherton tableland that bring their coconuts and their bananas and their amazing wares down to market every week. And it's about the chefs who stopped bringing in frozen fish and started using the local reef fish, which is delicious. And, you know, it's changed. The culture up here is changing. It's not about just coming into town and in order to visit the Daintree Rainforest and the reef. People are actually coming here for the food experience as well now, which is a testament to Spencer, actually.
Yeah, and
changing it.
And to others, you know, back in the day, and I talk about this quite historically, it was a little fishing village that where this great big ass hotel was built, and there was probably two or three. There was a Radisson across the road, and there wasn't a great deal else. And then, you know, we sort of watched over 2 years the development, but post that, seeing, I was back up in Port Douglas a couple of years ago, and seeing the change up there now, it's quite extraordinary. You talked about produce. There's a big Italian population in and around the Atherton Tableland who are responsible for the growth of the farming in that region. What's some of the produce that's being highlighted? What are some of those reef fish and some of the sort of land and foragey sort of stuff that's being highlighted throughout the weekend?
You know what? I'm just going to go straight to the distillery. I was just so impressed recently on a trip up into the Atherton Tablelands. It's a place called Mount Uncle, and they use all local botanicals, which is a mystery because they like to keep their ingredients mysterious, but there's a lot of local flavour in there, and it's one of the best gins I've ever tasted. It's going to give the Melbourne gins a run for their money once they decide to get the distribution working, but at the moment they're really happy just servicing the local businesses and making sure people down here in Port Douglas and Cairns getting enough gin. But it's something really unique, and you can order it online. It's called Mount Uncle.
I expect you'll be bringing back a bottle, because after the amount of gin I may have consumed yesterday at the Project Botanicals launch for Bombay Sapphire, I don't know that I can. I don't know that I can even think about gin today, Wendy.
You know what? I was supposed to go to that, Peter. I would have loved to have gone to that.
I tell you what, it was a 10-course feast, each matched with a cocktail that, or the food was matched to highlight one of the botanicals, because there's 10 botanicals, usually 10 or more, used to make gin. So things like coriander and all sorts of peppers and different things that are used to make gin. So we did all sorts of things. Oh, the food was outstanding. Tony Twitchett at Taxi is an incredibly talented chef, and we were able to sit. We sat about halfway through after we'd had five cocktails and made some fragrance. This it went for 5 hours. It was absurdly long.
It's always dangerous having lunch with you, Mr. Dillon.
It was really good fun. So I'm quite pleased we did it. And Project Botanicals, we'll speak to them next week here on the program and talk about gin and how it all comes about and what the Project Botanicals program is. So stand by for that. So I'm expecting in your hand luggage there'll be a little bottle of gin you're bringing back for P. Diddy.
Oh, okay. I'll absolutely bring one back for you.
Oh, you're a darling. Because it's show number 398 here, Wendy, on Cravings. In 2 weeks, we're celebrating 400 shows, I know. I normally do it up in the Noosa Food and Wine Festival, but we couldn't celebrate our birthday up there this year, so we'll celebrate it back here in this studio. I might have a bit of a cake.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, because it's 8 years.
400 episodes. Mm, that's
8
amazing.
Years, yes. It's been a... and the program has not rested either, so it's like me, it's starting to look a little tired and old.
Oh, never. And I wouldn't be admitting to that, because you're on radio, darling, and unless there's a video camera in there, you can be whatever you want to be.
Exactly. People think that I come in here dressed in a suit and looking very sharp. I don't. Hey, back to Port Douglas, you were talking about Reefish. Have you had a chance to get out on the reef and have a bit of a look? It's a stunning place.
I haven't yet, but I'm hoping tomorrow to join one of the local Aboriginal elders on a mangrove hunt.
Oh, nice.
Which will be fascinating. This is something that Spencer Patrick did with Darren Robertson from Three Blue Ducks.
Yes.
And
lovely,
as I like to call him, the Fluffy Duck Boys. And they went out, and there was a video where they'd hunted for crabs in the mangroves and amazing shellfish that no one had ever seen. It was a little bit like a, you know, certain overseas chef that might have landed in Sydney recently.
You can say his name, nice. Dear. Are you talking about Renee?
Yes, I'm talking about Renee.
Renee Redzepi, for those of you playing at home, playing the Cravings drinking game. We see how many names we can drop each week. There's another one, Renee Redzepi. Off you go.
Funk. There we go. So he said, I met this fellow, of all places, in an Irish bar in the main street of Port Douglas last night, where he plays in a band. This Aboriginal fellow who's going to take me because tomorrow some sort of right moment of full moon where the crabs are fatter, apparently, and easier to catch. And we then build a fire on the beach and throw them in the fire and eat them in a very old-school Indigenous Australian way of eating the crabs, and that's going to be my trip highlight, I think.
I think it sounds marvellous and very rustic. Mind the midges there on the beach, Dull. Have a very good time for the rest of the festival. Thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Anytime, Peter, and congratulations on your birthday.
Oh, thanks, Dull. That's Wendy Hargreaves. You will know her as a journalist and commentator here in Melbourne. She's one of the food and wine specialists. I don't know why she gets invited up there to be a food media, and I don't, but I'll take that up with Mr. Patrick. It is a great festival to get along to taste Port Douglas, and probably one of our four or five premier food and wine festivals in the country, celebrating all things that are beautiful and Queensland. We're going to have a couple of messages, and then I'm going to finish with a track called Waves, being done by Nouvelle Vague, because we have gone coastal today. Next week, Peter Caravita will join me, and we'll also talk gin next week. We are eventually going to get this interview up with Peter Caravita, I promise you. And also, in 2 weeks' time, it's show number 400, 8 years of Cravings on your wireless every Saturday. We haven't taken a rest. So we're going to have some sort of celebration. I think there might be a tipple of fizzy wine and a little bit of cake. But that's me done. I'll see you at the Pride game if you are going this evening. Don't forget, Chicks Talking Footy are broadcasting live this afternoon, this evening, for the Pride, the inaugural Pride match for the AFL between St Kilda and Sydney Swans. So keep your wireless tuned to Joy all afternoon and evening and support the Chicks Talking Footy. Also, get along if you can to the game and support your team. Support your team, be out loud and proud like we are right here on Joy 94.9. My name has been Pete Dillon. This is Cravings and I'll return to you next week. Have a very good afternoon.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.